Hello, and welcome to A History of Japan. Season 6, Episode 17, Taira Triumph. In the aftermath of the Heiji Rebellion, the Issei Taira clan stepped in to fill the vacuum in imperial leadership. In fact, samurai so thoroughly dominated court politics in the second half of the 1100s that some historians mark the end of the Heian period at the Hogen Rebellion of 1156. In this episode, I want to focus on how the Taira clan governed the nation from 1160 to 1180. While the cloistered Emperor Go Shirakawa and the sitting Emperor Nijo were obviously still around, the Issei Taira clan was unquestionably in control of the government during the final 25 years of the Heian period. The Heiji Rebellion had lasted just 2.5 weeks and involved, at most, a few thousand fighting men, yet it completely altered the course of Japanese history forever. In 1159, just before the Heiji Rebellion, the elder Taira Tadamori died, and his son Kiyomori took over leadership of the Issei Taira clan. While Kiyomori's accomplishments were quite impressive, his father and grandfather laid some very important groundwork which he capitalized upon. While this particular branch of the Taira clan had roots in Issei, a coastal province which borders Chubu to the east, the services they rendered the government in the inland sea around Shikoku and the southern coast of Chugoku was part of what helped their star to rise early on. We already discussed the adventures of Kiyomori's grandfather, Taira Masamori, who beheaded the rebel pirate Minamoto Yoshichika, but because the Taira frequently served as governors of Harima and other western coastal provinces, they often tangled with pirates who plagued the precious trade routes and threatened the economy. And by the late Heian period, that economy was booming. Chinese merchants visited Kyushu more frequently, in part thanks to the Song dynasty's promotion of trade. While the merchants imported fine porcelain, silks, and books, the Japanese traded ceramics, fine metalwork, and, most critically for the Song merchants, gold. You may recall that the northern Fujiwara samurai clan who ruled over Tohoku owned gold mines, and they even built a trading port in Hiraizumi so that the Chinese merchants could bring their goods directly. The northern Fujiwara also acted as middlemen, trading goods with the Ainu, which they then passed along to Song merchants. So much gold and other goods were shipped to China during the 1100s that the Song dynasty actually ran a trade deficit with Japan. The northern Fujiwara were not the only innovators of direct trade. The Issei Taira promoted the building of new trade ports all throughout the Inland Sea, and especially in Aki and Bingo provinces. Business was so good that many Chinese merchants resettled in Kyushu and other port towns and adopted Japanese names and customs. Urban centers beyond the capital began to grow, including Hakata Bay, which is near Dazaifu, Hiraizumi in the north, and Naniwa. Another of the Issei Taira clan's contribution to this economic boom was keeping piracy under control. Taira Kiyomori, however, always excelled at killing multiple birds with a single stone. He often paraded crowds of captured pirates through the streets of Heian-kyo, but often these groups were actually members of rival clans in Chugoku whom Kiyomori was trying to dominate or eliminate. On at least one occasion, Kiyomori forged an arrest warrant for a troublesome provincial strongman whom he had been having trouble dealing with. Although retired Emperor Go Shirakawa knew about these underhanded dealings, he didn't dare move against the Taira, who were actively working their way deeper into the structure of the Daijo Daikan. As I mentioned in the previous episode, Taira Kiyomori was given an unprecedented promotion for his service in defending the retired and sitting emperors. He was made a sangi, which is a counselor who directly advises the emperor. This was the highest office thus far that a samurai had ever been appointed to, and Kiyomori had no plans to stop there. As he continued dealing with the pirate menace and promoting trade which enriched the nation, he continued serving at both the court of the cloistered emperor and the official Daijo Daikon. In 1167, just 7 years after the Heiji Rebellion, Kiyomori was named as Daijo Daijin, the Chancellor of the Realm. While this promotion was unprecedented, it was more of a recognition of Kiyomori's existing power than an expansion thereof. Taira Kiyomori's influence in the halls of government resulted in a massive increase in his influence among the samurai. Previously limited to serving as bodyguards or in provincial enforcement offices like Oryoshi, the samurai could now realistically entertain notions of holding higher offices, both in provincial governments and in the capital. As everyone knew, Taira Kiyomori was the man who could set a humble samurai on the path to one day becoming a wealthy provincial governor or even a counselor. I mentioned earlier that some historians have made a case that 1160 or 1156 should be considered the final year of the Heian period because the samurai dominated court offices afterward. Those who assert keeping the traditional ending year of 1185, and I count myself among that number, point out that while Kiyomori was certainly the de facto ruler during this period, he was still largely ruling through the traditional organs of the Daijo Daikon. The level of power Kiyomori exercised was similar in scope to that of the Fujiwara dictators of the Middle Heian, and while he was a samurai, he was also a kuge. In the early 1100s, the Issei Taira spread their influence among the other samurai clans by arranging their appointment in the Imperial Guard, as inspectors, or even as warriors who fought against pirates and rebels under the leadership of the Taira generals. These were not just plum appointments for those desiring an easy salary, but were rife with opportunity for the ambitious to raise their status. An appointment in the capital was an opportunity to impress wealthy nobles, hobnob with royalty, and perhaps gain a powerful patron who might sponsor a rank promotion and a higher appointment down the road, perhaps as vice governor or other high-level provincial authority. When Taira Kiyomori became the leading samurai-slash-noble in the nation in 1160, he began to cut out the middleman. As a member of both the Daijo Daikon and the Insei court, he used his accumulated influence to start granting promotions and provincial appointments to vassal clans himself, directing their loyalty toward his person rather than toward the kuge or the government. Elite members of the Issei Taira clan remained, unsurprisingly, extremely popular candidates for provincial governorships and other high-ranking posts around the nation. For many years, it was believed by Japanese historians that the Taira used their status as provincial governors to recruit provincial samurai as vassals, but more recent research suggests that this is not true. The Taira would not triumph forever, and after they had fallen from power, they were widely derided as corrupt tyrants, which has made it difficult for modern historians to differentiate between malicious slander and legitimate criticism. This is not to say that the Taira weren't actively recruiting vassal clans throughout the nation, just that they were not specifically using their gubernatorial privileges to do so. The emperors, both sitting and retired, allowed the Taira to expand their estates, and those estates needed protectors and enforcers. They also needed troops to serve in their armies in the capital for both protection and intimidation. It should come as no surprise that a lot of court nobles were not big fans of Taira Kiyomori. However, he also made enemies among the religious establishment. While some samurai and kuge might hesitate to use force to disperse the mobs of Kofukuji, Miidera, Todaiji, and Enryakuji, Kiyomori seems to have had few moral qualms about doing so when it benefited him politically. While the sources often excoriate Kiyomori as a materialistic non-believer, these accounts are pejorative and often penned by the very religious powers who proudly counted themselves among his enemies. Taira Kiyomori was, in fact, quite spiritually minded, but he seemed to prefer the native kami worship over Buddhism. While his pilgrimage in late 1159 that sparked the Heiji Rebellion is believed by many to have been a ruse, there were plenty of occasions upon which he completed pilgrimage to the Kumano shrines, as well as holy sites in Chugoku. In particular, the Itsukushima Shrine of Aki Province, which is much closer to Kyushu than Kansai, enjoyed his special attention and sponsorship. The tale of the Heike goes as far as accusing Kiyomori of redirecting state funds away from the temples of Mount Hiei and Nara and toward his pet project in Chugoku. The Itsukushima Shrine itself still exists, and the 12th century architecture is preserved in striking detail. The structures follow the Shinden-zukuri architectural style we discussed in episode 1 of this season, and were built on raised platforms along the island coast. At high tide, the structures appear to float atop the water, and the effect is quite beautiful. I will post some pictures on the supplemental blog post so that you can see it for yourself. It really is a breathtaking sight. His status as a pretentious commoner notwithstanding, Kiyomori's diplomatic work legitimately improved Japan's economy and attracted Song merchants to journey beyond Kyushu and make stops along the southern coast of Chugoku and the western coast of Kansai. Building on the groundwork laid by his father and grandfather, he even managed to attract Chinese specialists who settled in Kansai and practiced medicine, divination, or brought other specialty knowledge. While I am sure the Taira clan would be happy to take credit for the booming economy of the 1100s, there were several factors beyond their control which also aided development. The various illnesses which had previously decimated the population, like smallpox and measles, became more manageable as physicians found workable treatment regimens. Child mortality was still fairly high, and even the best treatments often left scars or other permanent chronic symptoms, but as survivability went up, so did the population. A little. Enough to fill the ranks of artisans, smiths, and miners necessary to keep up with Chinese demand for Japanese goods. In 1165, Emperor Nijō became extremely ill and, just before dying, he passed the throne to his son, Prince Yoshihito. He is remembered as Emperor Rokujō, and he was just 1 year old. 3 years later, in 1168, he was pressured to retire, then naming his six-year-old uncle, Prince Norihito, as his successor. This successor was a son of retired Emperor Go Shirakawa, and he is remembered as Emperor Takakura. 3 years later, in 1171, Kiyomori arranged for his daughter, the 17-year-old Taira Tokuko, to be married to the sitting Emperor Takakura, and the next year, when the young Tenno came of age, they were officially wed. It is important to note that the Issei Taira had been arranging imperial marriages for quite some time leading up to these particular nuptials. In fact, Emperor Takakura's mother hailed from the Taira clan, though she had been essentially adopted by Kiyomori's daughter and was not one of Kiyomori's direct descendants. However, having the sitting emperor marry his daughter was an unmistakable sign that Kiyomori intended to solidify his power and bring about a new dictatorship similar to that of the Fujiwara regents. While the Kuge mostly ground their teeth impotently at Taira Kiyomori's continued rise to the heights of political power, a few decided to take matters into their own hands. Between 1160 and 1180, there was the occasional plot against Kiyomori, most of which were discovered and crushed while they were still in the planning stages. The Shishigatani incident of 1177 remains the most famous of these plots. This is likely due to its proximity with another much larger event that began in 1180, but its participants owe their posthumous fame in part to the Heike Monogatari, the Tale of the Heike, an epic story written in the 1300s which begins with the Shishigatani incident. The aim of the conspirators in this particular plot was to murder the leaders of the Taira clan and seize control of the government. The primary actors were high-ranking Kuge, who were frustrated by the seeming omnipotence of Taira Kiyomori. Fujiwara Narichika and his son Naritsune joined with Buddhist monks Saiko and Shunkan, all of them close confidants of the retired Emperor Go Shirakawa. While on retreat at a mountain manor called Shishigatani, these Kuge made a pact along with Tada Yukitsuna and Taira Yasuyori. It might seem strange that a member of the Taira clan would plot its demise, but Yasuyori was actually from the Nakahara clan, who had been honored with the use of the Taira surname. Just another reminder that pre-modern Japanese naming conventions were complicated, and that not everyone with a certain surname shared the same ancestors. Every member of the conspiracy felt good about their chances at overthrowing Taira Kiyomori, except for Tadayuki Tsuna. According to the tale of the Heike, when Narichika and the other primary movers of the plot became embroiled with drama involving the temples, their preparations stalled. Tadayuki Tsuna lost faith in the effort and went directly to Kiyomori to report the entire plot. Furious at yet another plot against his person, an enraged Kiyomori summoned the monk Saiko and, once he was in custody, arranged for him to be tortured until he named the other conspirators. Some historians believe that Kiyomori thus manufactured this plot through his advanced interrogation of Saiko, directing the torturers to ask for confirmation of the involvement of Shunkan and the Fujiwara's Narichika and Naritsune. It is true that they were competent, capable men who served the retired Emperor Go-Shirakawa, and thus Kiyomori naturally would want them removed from the cloistered emperor's court so that he wouldn't get any wild ideas about governing the nation without the guiding hand of the Issei Taira clan. This was not exactly a clear, well-thought-out coup with a high likelihood of succeeding. Regardless of the accuracy behind the charges, the parties involved were found guilty. Saiko was beheaded, but the other conspirators were sentenced to exile. The Fujiwara father and son team were sent to a remote island off the southern coast of Kyushu, along with Shunkan. In the tale of the Heike, Taira Shigemori, Kiyomori's eldest son and heir apparent, interceded on behalf of the exiles, and the life of Fujiwara Narichika was said to have been spared from execution thanks to his efforts. The Fujiwaras were pardoned in 1178, but Shunkan, considered the primary mastermind of the conspiracy, did not receive any such honors and remained on the island until his death in 1179. The Shishikatani incident is probably the most well-preserved and most famous of the many plots against Taira Kiyomori, even though it never really reached a stage where it was an actual threat to the samurai chancellor. Things may have stayed this way for some time if the general status quo had been preserved. The Issei Taira may have simply become the military arm of the Daijo Daikon over time and functioned as a new organ of government in its own right. The enemies of Kiyomori, however, would soon have a just cause around which they could unify and challenge the seemingly invincible Issei Taira clan. The marriage between Emperor Takakura and Taira Tokuko proved fruitful. In December of 1178, she gave birth to a son named Prince Tokuhito. This child represented Kiyomori's entire purpose behind arranging the marriage in the first place. His grandchild would someday sit upon the throne, and the great quest to replace the Fujiwara regents would be complete. In March of 1180, when the child was just 1 year old, Kiyomori made his move. The retired Emperor Go-Shirakawa woke to discover that his home was surrounded by samurai warriors, who soon insisted that he accompany them to a more secure location, a pretense which actually meant house arrest for the retired sovereign. Soon afterwards, Emperor Takakura was informed that he would soon be retiring and that his son, Prince Tokuhito, would succeed him on the chrysanthemum throne. This one-year-old Tenno is remembered as Emperor Antoku. With all of the living sovereigns firmly under his martial control, and his own grandson now installed as Tenno, Taira Kiyomori's political power had reached its zenith. His foes at court, however, decided that enough was enough. They sought help among samurai who had been kept out of Kiyomori's vassalage network, those who had been passed over and discarded by the samurai chancellor to help them in opposing his dictatorship. One of Kiyomori's oldest enemies would soon join the cause of ousting the Issei Taira clan from power, the young Minamoto Yoritomo, spared in the bloody aftermath of the Heiji Rebellion, was eager to avenge his father and defeat Kiyomori once and for all. Next time, we will catch up with the monks of both Mount Hiei and Nara as they grew increasingly militant and aggressive both towards one another and toward the government itself. Until then, thank you for listening. If you would like access to exclusive bonus episodes, as well as ad-free versions of the regular episodes, please consider supporting this podcast at patreon.com/ahistoryofjapan. If you happen to be in need of a new t-shirt, hoodie, sticker, journal, or magnet, and want to help support this podcast, why not kill two birds with one stone and visit our official merch store? Check out the ever-growing selection of designs inspired by Japanese history at ahistoryofjapan.threadless.com. Thank you for your support.